My name is Bert Weisbord. My name is Bert Weisbord, and I'm here to talk with Brendan Kiley about my novel, Inside Passage, and more generally, about the unique culture and landscape of Seattle in the Pacific Northwest and how that influences the novel. Brendan did research for me on Inside Passage. He's also an editor, art critic, book critic, theater critic, investigative reporter, and jack-of-all-trades at The Stranger, a legendary alternative newspaper and a Seattle institution. I produce feature films including Ghost Story, starring Fred Astaire, and Raggedy Man, starring Sissy Spacek. For more information about me and about my book and the other books in the Corey Logan trilogy, please go to my website, www.bertweisbord.com. That's BURTWEISSBOURD. Let me begin with a question for Brendan. Brendan, how do you think the Northwest has shaped Inside Passage?
Well, I think it's probably shaped it in a couple of different ways, or a few different ways. I mean, one, which is a very distinctive feature of Seattle and of the Northwest, is you have this very dramatic landscape, which features heavily in a lot of Northwest writing and filmmaking and art making. But you also have this proximity to the city, to the metropolis. So you have this sort of interplay between these wild, dramatic landscapes, but also this very sort of urban, human environment. And so these people can, you know, who are collected together in the urban environment can go out into the landscapes and have these very dramatic kinds of stories that they, you know, enact and that happen to them. Another is that, you know, I think the Northwest has a reputation, and deservedly so, for being kind of a home to maverick or eccentric personalities, which also is good for dramatic storytelling purposes. And you also have this sense of, like, the promise of the West, this, you know, mythological promise of the West, where someone can remake himself or herself. And sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes it's a bad thing. But I think it also lends itself to dramatic storytelling. And the social networks here are maybe not quite as ossified as they are in older cities. You know, Seattle's a fairly young city. So people can rise and fall fairly independently and fairly quickly, as opposed to some other places in the country. Those are the ways that I see the landscape affecting the book. But I'm curious to ask you how you know, you come from Chicago, you lived in Los Angeles, lived in Seattle, now lived in New York. But Inside Passage takes place in the Northwest. So I'm curious what attracts you to this place as a canvas for storytelling.
Well, I think the Northwest is like this unique stew. I don't know quite how else to describe it. It's there. It's, you know, Seattle is so cosmopolitan, but it's a different kind of cosmopolitan. It's Native Americans, it's Asians, it's Scandinavians. It's not quite the same makeup as other cities. It's also the proximity to the wilderness. You can't forget when you're in Seattle about Puget Sound, for example, which I think many people don't know how cold it is. You fall off the ferry and you die of hypothermia. You know, it's not a very welcoming body of water. And, you know, you look out your window and you see the Cascades, or you see, you know, the Olympics, or you see Mount Rainier. I mean, and there is this sense that, you know, wilderness is within reach. And I was very interested in that kind of, and well, I guess we ought to also talk a little bit about the Seattle character. I mean, which is, Seattleites are independent in their very private, and they are somewhat conflict avoidant, and there is a kind of culture there that fascinated me. And as you say, it attracts mavericks, and people tend to sort of find their own way. And that whole, when I first moved to Bainbridge Island, I was just fascinated by the region, by the physical beauty, and by the people. And that is why I set the book there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I agree that that Seattle, unlike a lot of other cities, is a place where you can be standing in the middle of a fairly, you know, urban, dense area, but you're standing on a hill, and you can see the mountains, and you can see the water, and it's not quite the same as being in, you know, the middle of Chicago or Los Angeles, which is fairly flat, and when you look out, what you see is just more city. But here, you're constantly reminded that there's this world, and as you say, sometimes a dangerous world, you know, right outside your window, where you can die of hypothermia quite easily.
Well, and you know, I used to take the kids fishing right out in Puget Sound, or take them out of school for a day and drive over the mountains and fish in the Yakima River. You get to the mm-hmm. Yakima east of the mountains, and you might as well be in Montana. I mean, it's that vast different landscape. And it's so exciting to have access to that kind of wilderness so easily. And it really, I mean, I can see how it shaped my children, how their ability to negotiate their way independently in wild country is very different than growing up in New York City.
Right.
Go ahead.
I was going to say Seattle's also a city of transition. You know, there's it being a Pacific Rim city, it's got that sort of transition immigrant culture that has a very heavy Asian influence, but also was the jumping off point for people going to Alaska to look for gold and that kind of stuff. And so you have a sense that things, at least I do, that things maybe shift a little more quickly, that the environment's a little more malleable than it is in other urban centers.
And let's also talk a little bit about Seattle's political history and the anarchists and the kind of attraction for radicals.
Well, certainly, yeah, that's a big part of Seattle history. I mean, the IWW, the Wobblies, had a big foothold here because of the way the logging industry was unfolding. You have the Everett Massacre, which was a big moment in labor history. And there was, you know, people don't necessarily think of Seattle as a very like strong African American center, but there was a big Black Panther presence here, and the George Jackson Brigade, and in a more contemporary way, there's a pretty strong anarchist community here, too. So there is a history of radical politics that I think attracts some people, or at least influences. There's a vein of it running through the culture of the city, which is attractive to some people, I think.
As a critic of theater and art and books, how do you think this sort of unusual mix of, I don't know what I call the stew, shapes the work that you cover?
Well, I was actually just earlier today talking to the choreographer Donald Byrd from Spectrum Dance Theater, who's having his 10th anniversary season here, and he came from New York and had his own company in New York, and you know, studied with Merce Cunningham and other people, or at least you know, was influenced by them, you know, and he said that you know, in New York, where he came from in 2002, there's this almost like an arts bureaucracy that you have to negotiate. You know, there's the uptown bureaucracy and the downtown bureaucracy, and all of these people all spending all this energy vying for a place just to show their work and to be noticed. And one of the things about Seattle is that it's getting sort of more and more attention over the years for its dance, its theater, its literature. But there's also some space here. There's some room to breathe. It's not super expensive. People aren't constantly, you know, rushing around trying to impress the next person. So that it has this combination of a spotlight on it that people are paying attention to, but it also gives people a little bit of room to really buckle down and make their work. And there's another company called the Satori Group that I'm writing about now, who they came from Williams College 5 years ago and went to a bunch of different cities. They went to Austin, they went to Chicago, they were looking for a home. And they chose Seattle also for that reason, because they felt like there was a level of rigor here, but also, you know, some time and some space to really incubate and create the work they want to create. So it's this unusual combination, I think, of rigor and interest in what people are doing, but also a level of freedom that maybe you don't get in a more ossified city.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I also think that there's something about the Northwest character that is very, in its own way, nurturing for writers, artists, etc., in that people leave you alone. I mean, there is a kind of...
Right.
I mean,
you get a lot of time to look out the window.
It's a very good place to work, and people are not intrusive. You know, they're not. They're respectful of your privacy, of your work life, of your whatever your work process is. And that's a good atmosphere to create. How would you describe the Northwest character? And that's, I think, I would like to talk a little bit about how the characters in Inside Passage are impacted by that.
Well, I think, you know, as I was saying before, there's a kind of mythological promise of the West, which is maybe somewhat true and in some ways not so true. But the idea that you can remake yourself, that you can reinvent yourself, that you're not born into a rut that you have to be living in for the rest of your life. And so I think that gives a certain, and there's a certain almost, I mean, Seattle identifies as a liberal city, but I think there's also a somewhat libertarian streak in there as well, and that people do want to be left alone to do what they want to do. I mean, sometimes I think of Seattle as like an urban version of Alaska, where you have, you know, it's also sort of a magnet for eccentricity and live and let live kind of folks, but it's spread out over a vast geographic area. And here you have that sort of character in a dense situation all trying to negotiate with each other. So I think that there's a value placed on freedom, but also a value placed on getting along. I mean, there's the infamous Seattle process, which people talk about in terms of politics here, of this kind of more consensus-based way of doing things than, say, you know, Mayor Daley's Chicago hierarchical way of doing things. So it's this combination of negotiation between having to, you know, get along, but also everyone feels like they have a stake and feels like they have some kind of ownership over themselves and over the community itself. So that creates a kind of tension that I think is interesting, both for the people who live here and for the people who make art here, whether it's writing or a theater or what have you.
Well, let's talk specifically about Abe and Corey and Inside Passage. And how they fit into this matrix you're describing, because, mm-hmm. you know, Abe is a psychiatrist, and Abe has a lot of eccentric, you know, Seattle Northwest regional qualities. He really doesn't care what anyone else thinks.
He doesn't like to drive.
He doesn't dress fashionably, but he's not what you think of as a Northwest character.
How do you mean?
He's very psychological, and, you know, in the Northwest, you know, if you're not feeling too well, you might go out and chop some wood. You're not necessarily going to therapy, mm-hmm. and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean, I just mean people really... don't talk too much about their feelings and how they deal with them, especially the unpleasant ones. They just deal with them. Mm-hmm. Whereas Abe is the opposite of that. I mean, I think Abe is sort of a counterpoint, and Corey is more of a Northwest character in this way.
Right. She's more outdoors-oriented. She's more maybe maverick than Abe is in some ways.
Yeah, but they're both unlikely characters, and there's only in a place like Seattle that the two of them could meet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like that's part of the what works in the book is that, you know, these very unlikely characters. She's coming out of prison. She's tough, unexpressive. She has to, you know, get a psychiatric evaluation in order to get her son back from foster care.
Mm-hmm.
Abe has his mother, who is a sort of driving force in national politics. And I think she's a Northwest character, too, the way she manages that. And has sort of dropped out. He has his own little psychiatric practice above a Chinese restaurant, you know. And she comes to him for an evaluation. Of course, their first meeting is a disaster. And but he's, you know, after she sees several other people, he looks better and better. And as unlikely as it seems, they fall in love. And that's a very Northwest story, and it's a very sweet story. And the other thing that we haven't really said about Seattle that's important, and is part of how this novel is built, is that Seattle is a small city. And in a city like Seattle, it's very believable that Abe would take Corey to his mother's Sunday brunch, where she's promoting the her candidate for state attorney general, who's also her lover. And who it would this be but the same guy that framed Corey and sent her to prison and threatened her son. And the world is small enough in Seattle that I think that's plausible.
I think so, too. I was curious to ask you about some about how the antagonist in the novel embodies some maybe not so savory Northwest characteristics as well.
Well, Nick Season is a guy with lots of secrets. And Seattle's a good town for people who like to keep secrets.
And why is that?
Well, nobody really pries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there isn't a kind of, I mean, you go to L.A. or New York, and you go out to dinner with people, and, you know, about half hour into it, everyone's going to be asking, you know, questions that people in Seattle would never ask you. And it's very possible for somebody to have a very private and different public life than their private life. And Nick Season embodies that, I think. I don't think he's a Northwest character, however. I mean, he's a psychopath. but he can get away with it in a way that he might not get away with it so easily. And again, I think that it's much more believable that Jessie, who is Abe's mother, falls in love with this man and doesn't really get what's going on internally with him, because, well, not only because he's so adroit at that kind of deception, but because she's not asking those questions. She's just looking at how successful he is, and she's got her eye on that ball. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. I mean, there's also a kind of undercurrent of emphasis in the novel, I think, on being capable in a physical way of negotiating your environment, of being able to you know, navigate a boat, being able to fish, being able to fight. And that also, I think, comes into some of the tension between Abe and Nick. Is Abe just a brainiac, or is he capable of doing things, you know, physically in the physical world? that I think is interesting, too, when you talk about, you know, a Northwesterner going out to chop some woods to you know, think through or feel through some issues, that there is an emphasis placed on being able to do stuff physically and negotiate one's environment. An undercurrent in the novel.
The entire resolution of the novel is Abe taking Nick's misperception of him and turning it against Nick. And his misperception of him is that he's not physical, that he's not capable of that kind of, and that he is, you know, an internal. And that's the other thing that makes the Northwest a very interesting place to write about, is that, you know, you can do very complicated things. These are complex characters. And no one is quite what they seem to be. And the Northwest, or Seattle certainly, seems to lend itself to, I mean, there are a lot of complicated people who come for lots of different reasons and build identities for themselves that may not be who they were 20 years ago.
Which seems to be, you know, ideal, again, from a storyteller's perspective, to be able to deal with, or to have a landscape where there's a certain amount of unpredictability kind of coded into it from the beginning.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, let's talk a little more generally about what you would describe as the Northwest literature and how Inside Passage might fit into that.
Sure. I mean, there's, you know, I think there's a tradition in a tradition of Northwest literature, you know, with quote marks around it, that does have, whether it's in poetry or prose or nonfiction, a kind of emphasis on human relationships to the landscape or to the environment. You have poets like Theodore Rutke and Richard Hugo. You have novelists like Tom Robbins and Sherman Alexie and Tom Spanbauer. And then you also have
Ken
this
Kesey.
Whole need of... What's that?
I threw in Ken Kesey.
Oh, Ken Kesey, of course. And Jonathan Rabin on the nonfiction side. And then you have this, you know, streak of strong sort of mystery, noir, thriller kind of stuff. And it's fiction and nonfiction. You have people like A. Ann Rule and J. Jantz. And so there is a kind of darkness here, I think, that runs through a lot of that literature. Raymond Carver's another example. And I think that, you know, Northwest Passage seems to fit within that tradition, and that it's about, you know, people negotiating with each other, but also with you know, and the dangers within people, but also the dangers within the landscape. But it also has this mystery, kind of misty, dark side to it as well. So it seems to me to fit very neatly within that tradition. Did you think about that much when you were writing the novel, about sort of Northwest literature and how Inside Passage may or may not?
Well, I really wanted, the piece that I really wanted was to have the, you know, both the, like the alleys and the streets of Seattle and mm-hmm. the wilderness of the very remote areas of the Inside Passage. And mm-hmm. for people who aren't familiar with that, you know, the Inside Passage is the waterway that runs from Seattle, actually all the way up to Alaska, but in the book it really focuses on that part that is north of Vancouver Island in British Columbia. And I've been there fishing. That's how I first got to know it. And it's, you know, absolutely wild. And, you know, you see bear and you see eagles swooping down to take fish, you know, right out of the water. And there's treacherous tidal currents, and you have to really know what you're doing to negotiate these waters. And I was very interested in sort of making that a character in the book.
Right.
Sort of physical landscape. And I think that's in the Northwest literature tradition. I think that's what you were saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wonder, does the Northwest have such a hold on you that you want to set books in the future here, or are you setting your sights more on other landscapes like Chicago or Los Angeles or New York?
Well, you know, I have two more books in the Corey Logan trilogy, and both of those are mm-hmm. set in Seattle. Now, mm-hmm. In those books, it's more, you know, one is about, as you know, street kids and private school kids, and that's more about the sort of juxtaposition, again, of unexpected subcultures in Seattle. And we should talk a little bit about that, because Seattle really is a destination for lots of little subcultures. And and again, it's small enough that they bump into each other a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it's kids who live on the street and kids who go to private school. The other project that I'm working on, a book called In Velvet, takes place in Yellowstone Park. And that's, of course, is not dissimilar. My interest in Yellowstone Park is like my interest in the Inside Passage. I mean, it's one mm-hmm. of the remarkable wilderness areas in the world. And again, it's got, you know, in a given summer day, it might have hundreds of thousands of people in it. But if you get off the main roads and go into the backcountry, you know, there are hot spring pools and bears and, you know, wilderness stuff that doesn't exist anywhere else in the lower 48. So I think that's a common theme in what I write about.
And when you talk about this counterculture and or subcultures and also private school kids, you know, I think that's one thing that we haven't talked about that I think helps shape in some sense what this feels like to be in Seattle is this cosmopolitanism of industry. You know, on one hand you have fishing and logging, then on the other hand you have, you know, aerospace and
technology,
you know, computer programming and biotech, and so there's this combination of earthiness and also sort of very high level, more abstract kind of pursuits that meet together in the city.
Well, and you know, I think that it's no accident that companies like Amazon and Microsoft started in Seattle. I think that speaks to what you were saying earlier. You were talking about people in the arts choosing Seattle, but I think it's also a place for, you know, innovative entrepreneurs who, you know, have enough space and just like the, I mean, the Microsoft campus wouldn't exist in New York City.
Right, just be able to physically design and lay that out and build it, I guess, yeah, wouldn't be possible in New York. Do you get a sense of difference in New York in terms of your own work, you know, as opposed to writing in Seattle and writing in New York, or what the community of writers of the feeling is?
You know, there's a stimulating side to working in New York, but I often miss, you know, where I worked on Bainbridge Island, which was in this office that was looking out at the South Sound. And when I finished Inside Passage, I finished it last summer, editing it in Montana. And again, I was looking at the Madison River, and it was a very wonderful place to write. So now I'm looking out on a cityscape, which is very interesting. But it's, you know, the Upper East Side is not the Madison River or Puget Sound.
Right. It's a different kind of wilderness, I guess.
I think that we've covered a lot of ground here, and it's always fun to talk to you. I would like to say that the book is available now. It's a Rare Bird book. And they've been great publishers, and it's available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, Powell's, and your local bookstores. You can also go to my website and order it through the website. Brendan, is there anything you'd like to add before we sign off here?
No, just that I'm looking forward to the next book, whenever it's done. And it's a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you for producing the show.
Thanks.
Left you on the debris at the Sunday morning market. You were starting through the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. That old familiar love song. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. I went there and back.
more trouble at the depot. With the General Workers Union. And yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight and they're not working. Left you on the debris. Now we both know you got the money. And I wonder what you would have done.